And we're getting a picture on the TV. There's a great deal of contrast in it, and currently it's upside down on our monitor, but we can make out a fair amount of detail.
And ooh, I'm gonna write me something new. And ooh, I'm gonna forget about you.
All right, welcome to Live Color TV from the Moon. I'm your host, Rob Disner. Today, we will be talking to legendary singer-songwriter Britt Harper Uzel, a.k.a. Snooze. Snooze has played with many well-loved North Carolina bands, including Bus Stop and International Orange. And if you know him at all, it may be from the time he spent as a touring guitarist for Ben Folds. For the last decade, Snooze has been dealing with some serious health challenges, which affect his ability to play music and perform for the public on a regular basis. However, as a result, I think he's gained a unique perspective on life, which informs his songwriting and helps to express things that many of us have gone through or will be going through in our own lives. I'll start off just by mentioning a bit of my history with Snooze. I moved to Winston-Salem, North Carolina around 2012. And as a frustrated singer-songwriter myself, I was pleased to find a vibrant music community in the area, real supportive of local artists like Snooze. I got to see him playing around town a few times at places like The Garage, which is sadly no more. And when I held the benefit there for Scott Miller to raise money for his family after Scott's death in 2013, Snooze came out and played a song for us as well. Anyway, Snooze is just one of those artists who seems to have a natural ability to connect with anyone who happens to hear one of his songs. He uses a lot of humor in his music, which I feel is something sadly missing today. And yet he's also able to express serious subjects through song as well, which challenge the listener to examine their own feelings on life, death, religion, politics, and so much more. He also writes a lot about the craft of songwriting itself and his relationship to it. So as an introduction for those of you unfamiliar with his music, I thought we'd start out with one of those songwriting songs. This is In Service of the Song.
I spend my whole day in front of a blank page. My editor is never satisfied. Get rid of a solo. Check my ego. Please, drummer, keep it straight and strong. It's in service of the song. I miss out on a good time in search of a good line. I don't know. I stare out windows, and it's why I stay up all night long. It's in service of the song.
Snooze is just an all-around fabulous guy and a singular talent who, like so many others, deserves much more recognition for his work. I spoke to Snooze in January 2019 from his home near Hanging Rock State Park in Quaker Gap, North Carolina.
Morning, Rob. Snooze here.
Hey, well, of course. How are you? A prompt rock star. How often does that happen?
Well, I'm not certain. You tell me. You're the one that interviews musicians.
All right. So in one of your songs, you sing, "There's no chance of fortune or fame. It's a good thing I play for the love of the game." And after I heard that, I thought, why don't more people know this guy's music? Because what you express in that song is what so many of us who write songs have come to realize, which is that we write because we're writers. You know, all the other stuff is nice, but the ability to fully express an idea through song is really its own reward. I'm sure you'd agree.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you seem to get where I'm coming from, Rob. I guess that's why sometimes, you know, you were asking me about the interview and I was a little skeptical to it. And I guess I feel like my stuff, my music is rather self-explanatory. I'm not too abstract, you know, in my concepts or my lyrics, or I think I'm pretty straightforward. And I mean, you just kind of proved that, you know, you said back to me exactly what I was thinking as I was writing the song.
Yeah, I mean, I put together a playlist of your stuff, and I see like 2 minutes and 14 seconds, 2 minutes and 28 seconds, and it's like, you know what, he said everything that needed to be said, you know?
I do like brevity. I don't like, you know, redundancy in music a whole lot. I don't want to repeat a chorus. I kind of like to get in and out, trim the fat, and express what the thoughts that needed to be expressed, and then get out and get to the next tune. It's just kind of the way of, and I kind of grew up, you know, my love for my genre that I was so taken by as a young man was punk rock. And that was kind of the ethos of that whole scene was, you know, the songs were quick, fast, in and out, and then on to the next one. And that, it kind of just stuck with me. And I always liked that application when I was writing music.
Well, I put a bunch of stuff in there that, you know, doesn't need to be in there. And
well, and not that I don't like that stuff, you know. I love extended guitar solos and you know, things of that nature. But it's just not in me to create that, you know. So I just try to be true to myself, you know, as I'm creating, like anyone should.
When did you start writing songs? I mean, was it just, you know, as you started playing guitar, was it something that came later for you?
Well, it's funny. The first song I remember writing, I was probably 12 years old, looking at the back of Kiss Dress to Kill album cover, and I saw they had recorded at Electric Lady Studios.
Yeah, sure.
And so I wrote a song at the age of 12 called Electric Lady, and that was my first tune. And I can still play it and remember every word of it to this day. I even played it at a show.
That's really cool.
Several months ago.
It's a catchier title than, you know, Record Plant, where I used to work. So.
Record Plant, yeah, that's it. But I started writing then, but then, like, after I wrote that first tune, I kind of didn't really find the motivation to continue writing. And for some reason, I think it's because I grew up in Fayetteville, and all my friends, you know, there was not many original music bands in Fayetteville at the time. There were lots of cover bands, and any of my friends that played instruments played in cover bands, and it just really didn't dawn on me to think about writing music so much. That just seemed something that, you know, faraway giants did, and that was never something that would even be within my grasp to write music that would amount to anything.
Fayetteville, I swore I'd leave you, but I never will. Fayetteville, where life is sweet, time is standing still, and I apologize when I ragged on you or denied I was from you. I'm not worth the dirt under you for saying a thing like that. Fayetteville, I swore I'd leave you, but I never will. So old, worn, brown and plain, my hometown, slow to change. Hear me, Fayetteville, a part of me lives there still.
So I didn't really write music much during high school years at all. And it wasn't until I kind of discovered punk music in, you know, the early 80s or the mid-early 80s. And it kind of taught me, you know, in the punk world, you have to be original. You have to write your own music. You know, there are no punk cover bands. And so it really made me think about writing my own music, and I've been hooked ever since. You know,
every punk band said, "Well, we can do this too," you know.
Exactly.
We may not know how to tune our guitars or any of that fancy stuff. Like, I read an interview with the Minutemen. They said, we thought some guys liked them loose and some guys liked them tight. Like, for the first year, they didn't even know they had a tune, you know. They just thought, however they felt on the guitar, if they were falling off, you had to tune them a little bit.
And so that just kind of reinvigorated my love for writing music, you know, that I hadn't done since Electric Lady as a 12-year-old, you know. And
you may have to send me a copy of that one. We may have to slip it in here.
Well, there's no copy that exists, so I'd have to record it. And I've actually been considering doing that,
right?
Just for fun. So if I ever delve into that, I'll let you know.
I did that too. I wrote a song for my girlfriend Annette. Probably I was 14.
Uh-huh.
And I gave her the tape, and of course, she never gave it back. So from memory, I kind of reconstructed what I remembered the song to be,
uh-huh,
probably 25 years later, and re-recorded it. And it wasn't bad, you know. I mean, it had a chorus and a verse and all the stuff a song is supposed to have. So it was okay.
Well, you know? I would imagine it was, Rob. I've heard some of your tunes, and you're a creative songwriter yourself.
Well, coming from you, it's something I really appreciate. As a matter of fact, I remember I did a little demo with Doug Davis, and you heard some of that stuff, and you know, commented positively, and I thought, you know, that's all I want as a songwriter, is like someone to say, hey, I like the chorus, or I liked, you know, when you said this or that, or whatever. I mean, it's so rare you even get a reaction when you put stuff out there at all, even like a thumbs up, you know, emoji on Facebook. It just kind of goes out there and off to the ether or whatever. So it's
right,
nice.
Right. It's like a balloon. You just put it out there and let it float away. And
that's it.
If anyone notices it, it's a lovely gift. You
yeah.
Know?
Yeah, absolutely. So what's your process? Do you come up with words, music? Is there any process?
I was thinking about that earlier, actually, and because I figured that was going to be a question.
Well, because I want to know how to do it. I mean, I've been doing it for 40 years, and I still haven't figured out how to write that good song. So I always like to hear how someone else, you know, goes about it.
Well, I do it different ways. You know, sometimes it's the lyrics first, sometimes it's the music first, and then I just sit around and think about lyrics until they fall into place. I would have to say probably generally, most of all, I start out with a lyrical idea. And it's generally just like one line, most likely the title to the song. You know, I've heard it said, if you have a really good title to your song, you've almost got the tune. It's just different every time.
We were so in love, but it couldn't be. Now, darling, I wonder if you think about long ago, we were wild and free. Now, darling, I wonder if you think about me. How I could make something out of nothing. Ain't that something? The way I can remember little things we did, like carving pumpkins, and I cut my hand. And we were so in love, but it couldn't be. Now, darling, I wonder if you think about me. And it was long ago, we were wild and free. Now, darling, I wonder if you think about.
Sometimes it's good to think about things in your head, humming the melodies, thinking about how the chords might go before you just pick up the instrument and play it and let your limitations stymie, you know, what you might create. Because you might hear something in your head that you've never done with your fingers. And sometimes it's worth putting thought into it before you just meander tall, like grab your instrument and you know, go to a familiar place.
Yeah, well, that's me in that familiar place. Matter of fact, I dug up a cassette that's just called Ideas, probably from the mid-80s, and I listened to it, and it's all the same stuff I'm doing now. It's the same kind of chords and the same whatever. I just found my little niche, and, you know,
golden nuggets in there, Rob.
Well, you know, you may notice, you know, some slight improvement in areas or whatever that probably nobody else would notice, and I think, oh, I figured out a better way to get into the chorus or whatever that maybe I wouldn't have known back then. But it's funny, if I hear myself playing in the mid-80s, it's the same. I mean, I went to, you know, Berklee Music College. I took lessons on harmony and how to sing notes off the page and whatever. And, you know, I learned jazz modes and all that stuff. And like 30 years later, that's still the same. I just sound like the same guy, you know.
Well, Rob, you probably have a lot of other things in life that you're concentrating on and not exclusively music.
This is true.
That's going to show as a result, but and it seems to be that we are mostly developed at a relatively young age, and you can kind of tell how much talent someone is capable of, almost like in their latter teens or even early teens. And as an adult, it doesn't seem like we continue to progress at the same rate we did at that young age.
Right.
Because we were really progressing rapidly, you know, back then. And, you know, and some superhumans are able to. But I guess it does relate to how much time in life you have to devote.
Adderall, Adderall, mixed with alcohol. I don't know why I did what I did. Adderall, Adderall, I had to take them all. And I don't know why I said what I said. And it was sweet as sugar cane when it was pumping through my veins and into my
to a lot of, you know, songwriting podcasts and interviews and things like that. I mean, a couple of things always come to mind. You know, Paul Simon says some people have a deeper well than others to draw from. And, you know,
that's
kind of true. It's just some people are wired to be able to express themselves in that way. Tommy Keene's brother put out a post after Tommy died, I don't know, last year, was it? And he said, if you think you can just sit down just through hard work and repetition and come up with songs like he did, he said, if you haven't done it before, you never will. And it's kind of a depressing thought, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, it is kind of true that some people are just hardwired to be able to put things out in a way that just is appealing for other people to hear. You know, it's not a thing. You can learn the mechanics. You can learn where to put the bridge and you can learn about different keys and all that kind of stuff, but you can't learn that thing that is just, you know, what some people have, and you can recognize it in a minute, but it's very hard to replicate, you know, even through practice.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There are just naturals, you know, like speaking locally here, you know, I would just draw as an example, you know, Ben Folds. He's, you know, continued to, you know, just produce brilliant work, and so he kind of, you know, he fits into that category as you were describing.
Yeah, sure. We'll talk about your history with him next. I often wonder about his career, that is it better to be like a one-hit wonder or a no-hit wonder? You know, I mean, he's got Brick, and maybe, you know, 90% of the people out there, if they know Ben Folds, they know him for that, whatever, 25-year-old song or whatever it is now. You know, and is it better to have that one thing where at least people are familiar with your work, or is it better just to have a group of people that love you, that, you know, maybe doesn't bring in the money or whatever, but that love your whole catalog versus that, you know, the one tune, which happens to be a great tune, you know, and something that never would get on the radio today, of course. But
right,
you know, it's interesting to think about guys like that, who of course are immensely talented. I mean, I bought his first record. I remember buying it. I bought it from Moby Disc on Ventura Boulevard in L.A. And I had a real crush on the girl behind the counter who was, you know, working at the store. And she said, "This isn't very good. I wouldn't get it." And I don't even know where I had heard it before. Even, you know, if you think about it back then, where did you hear stuff? Maybe I saw a video on MTV or, you know, the cool radio station played it or something. It's not like you can just dial it up like you can on the computer.
Music
today
was more difficult to find back then.
It was, and that was part of the fun, you know. But I had heard it somewhere, and I said, you know what, I'm going to buy it anyway. You probably won't like me now, but, you know. And, yeah, I mean, I've loved his stuff ever since that first record.
Yeah, he can write a score like no one's business.
Yep. So tell me about your history with him and his brother. I mean, I knew they grew up in the area as well.
Yeah, well, I guess I met Ben first and played, he was in the band Majosha at the time, and I played in a group called the Big Kids, and we played a show together, I remember, at the brewery in Raleigh. And I think we just kind of hit it off with each other at that show, and we were just kind of buddies after that. And so, and we ended up eventually playing together in a band that lasted for maybe four shows. It was just before the time that Ben left for Nashville. Like, I played with Ben, you know, for that group, and we played those few shows. And then, you know, he moved away and, you know, became a big star and all that stuff. Then in 2000, he called me. He came to a little club that I was playing at. I was performing with my buddy who sings under the name Walrus. And we had this, like, every Tuesday night gig in this little local club in Greensboro that we would play. And just, you know, money in our pockets. Ben was trying to put together a band for his tour, Rockin' the Suburbs tour, and heard that I was playing at this little club and came out to hear me play. I just thought he was just, you know, there to have fun. I didn't realize he was looking for a guitarist for this particular tour, but he was. 'Cause he called me the next day and asked me if I would consider going on tour. And so I said, of course. And we had a great time for the year 2001 that we toured, you know, UK and Japan, Australia and US and Canada. And it was just great. I mean, Ben's a wonderful guy to play music with, of course, incredibly competent and a fair, fun guy to be with. I mean,
I've seen the videos where he pulls his cab driver up on stage to play harmonica with him.
I haven't seen that.
There's some great stuff online. The guy that took him to the concert said that he played harmonica or whatever, and Ben pulled him up and said, come on and play with me. There's another one where there's a fake Ben Folds. It's this improv group, and there's a fake Ben Folds, and then like the tape starts to skip or whatever, and they realize they've got this guy that looks just like Ben Folds. And Ben comes out and punches him and drags him away, and they start the show that way. But there's another one. I think that's one of the funniest things out there. There was a website called Chat Roulette where you would just hit a button and you would chat with random people on a video.
I knew about this.
Right. So he
little stunt.
So he had this up on a screen, and any person that came up, he would just immediately compose a song on the spot about whoever he was seeing. There was a guy sitting on the toilet, and it was Bam sitting on the can or whatever.
Right.
You know, that kind of off the cuff stuff is very difficult to pull off in front of a live audience, you know.
Right. It's a good knack he's always had. He's just got away with words that can come up with anything, you know. He can come up with anything on the spot, and it's usually pretty damn good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that first solo record, that had to be a great time to play with him. I mean, I can't get enough of songs like Zach and Sarah, you know, Sitting on a PV Amp in 1984. I mean, this is stuff we can all relate to, you know?
Brilliant music. I feel myself very fortunate just to have been in his vicinity, you know, back in the early days, which brought him back to me at a later point, you know, then to pick me up and kind of bring me into his world. And, yeah, he was a very equitable boss. I mean, and a pleasure to play with.
Was he doing Hero Song back then too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know if that ever got on a record, but it's such a funny song.
Right. Yeah. I don't really, you know, I don't keep up with Ben a whole lot, but
yeah.
I think we were kind of the only band to play that tune.
Before my time in Winston-Salem, you were in a couple of real influential bands, Bus Stop and International Orange, if you want to talk about those guys and what they were up to.
Well, Bus Stop occupied the majority of the 90s for me and was a joy of a band to be in. It was a lot of fun. Evan Olsen is just a brilliant vocalist and one of the funniest guys I've ever had the pleasure of hanging out with. Chuck Folds is a great bass player, always on time, the most responsible one of us all. Nothing but good things to say about him and the drummer as well, Eddie Walker.
Plays with you now, doesn't he?
Yeah, I do play with Eddie, but I don't really play live any longer.
Right.
But if I did need to play a live show, Eddie would probably be my first choice and likely the drummer you might see with.
I'm kind of fascinated by Eddie Walker because you've got two recordings of your song Eddie, and then Ben also has Eddie Walker. It's like, how many songs need to be written about this guy? You know, what's he got going on?
Well, my song Eddie, which was recorded on a very early Bus Stop record, that's not about Eddie. That's just, you know, I kind of used his name or the name Eddie because I thought it fit well.
I figured it was the same guy, you know.
No, it was just the way it fit, and it had the right amount of syllables.
There
and,
you go. Sometimes that's all you need.
Yeah, and had the vowels that I wanted, and so that was it. You know how you just, you know, sometimes when you're writing a song, you actually just are making sounds until the vowels that you're uttering turn into words.
Right, sure. I do that for established songs. I say, why didn't they say this word instead of that word? Like, this one was so much better, you know. They mean the same thing, but this one is just the one that fits. But nobody asked me about this stuff. So I know you hate work. What other jobs have you done outside of music?
Not much outside of music. It's been all music based, except for, I worked for my buddy Mike down at his guitar shop, Heyday Guitars.
Yeah, sure.
A little bit. That was before I had my bone marrow stem cell transplant, though.
Right.
But all my work has been music based, either recording other people, either bands or a solo person, teaching lessons and just whoring myself in any capacity I could.
Work, just a lot of drive. I'm never gonna work me a 9 to 5. Tell the boss, man, I said goodbye. And I'm never gonna work another day in my life. I hate work. Yeah, I do hate work. You should too hate work. Ain't no clerk, hate work. Work, work, work in a factory and sweat my life in misery, man. Work like that's not meant to be, and work like that's just not for me. I hate work. Yeah, I do hate work. You should too hate work. Ain't no clerk, hate work. Your crummy job, and I'm never gonna fly to your stinking wars. So things are gonna change in the next election. So take a look now, this is your reflection. I hate work. Yeah, I do hate work. You should too hate work. Ain't no clerk, hate work. Ain't no joke.
It's a great way to make a living if you know you can make it work, and obviously very few can. And even if you have the talent, which clearly you do, we all know what a big struggle it is, especially today. Nobody's buying any physical product. Nobody's even downloading any songs anymore. Nobody wants to own anything, even if it doesn't even if it doesn't weigh anything. I mean, you know, when I think about my pile of records and then I think about a pile of downloads, it's like the downloads are so easy to move. I just take my iPod and I go. But like the pile of records, that's like a half a day of work to move all those records. But
yeah.
Nobody even wants to own, you know, the file anymore.
Yeah. Even though people don't want to pay to listen to music anymore, people still need to record their music, and you know they still have to pay for that to be done to some extent. So I still find lots of project musicians here in the area that need my help, and like developing a song and help them with a lyrical choice or two. And just, things like that where I think I'm of good service to the people that I work for. Yeah,
I would imagine you would be. And in service of the song itself.
That's bring it home, Rob. Bring it home.
So rather than going chronologically through your releases, when I started to kind of arrange things in a playlist, I thought we'd examine a couple of selections from some themes I've identified in your work. And maybe you've never looked at it thematically or whatever. It just happened to be that a few of the songs I like were about songwriting, and a few of them were about politics.
I have a definite theme of songwriting in my songwriting.
You even have a. I didn't think of this till now, but you even have a song about theme people, don't you?
Yes, I do.
All right, so now it's starting to expose itself. Anyway, so the first theme I've identified in your work, like I'm a college professor or something. The first theme identified, of course, is songwriting itself. We've got In Service of the Song, which we heard earlier on in the podcast. I spend my whole day in front of a blank page. My inner actor. Is it inner actor?
My inner editor.
Oh, wow. I thought it was actor. All right. My inner editor is never satisfied. I'm not good with these Southern accents, being a Yankee and all.
So, and I thought I enunciated well.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. When I write songs, I sing with the Southern accent. And then when I speak, it's totally gone. My wife is from Memphis, speaks, you know, without an accent until her dad's on the phone. And then she sounds like Flo from Mel's Diner or whatever. Like, it's like a whole different person.
That's a common phenomenon, I'm afraid.
Well, it's hard playing in a one-piece band. All I've got is my two hands to pull. Still pound wood till it starts to sound good to me. And I split my mind, I sing and play at the same time. And I find no one else, so I'll write this play myself. The third act, it was hell, and when that curtain fell, I thanked myself for standing there like I really cared. And it's hard playing in a one-piece band. All I've got is my two hands to pull. Still pound wood till it starts to sound good to me. The throne and the spotlight, I never felt so alone that night. The miles run, I stare, it's more cool not to care. It's hard for me to smile and pretend everything is fine, though I know the best start is when things fall apart. And it's hard playing in a one-piece band. All I've got is my two hands to pull. Still pound wood till it starts to sound. God, it's hard being a working man. All I've got is my two hands to pull. Still pound wood till it starts to sound good to me.
We're all one-piece bands today, you know. I mean, everybody's got to be their own promoter and their own marketing agent and their own drummer.
It is so true.
And everything else.
It is so true. And because, you know, when I don't know about any other body person situation, but when I'm recording out here at my home, I feel bad about inconveniencing, like, other musicians to come out here and play. Like, I think, yeah, my songs would benefit from having a really kick-ass drum part here, but I would have to, you know, bug my drummer pal Eddie or someone like him to come out here and perform that part. I can't really pay session players to come out here and do their thing, so I just end up doing it all myself.
That's where the multi-tracking comes in, you know.
And sometimes it's, you know, it's not advantageous for the same musician to play all the instruments in that. You know, if you kind of have like a laid back dragon type of feel like I do, and if I play the drums in that kind of style, well then I layer a bass on there where I'm have my same laid back style. And anyway, musicians with all the same style playing together sometimes it doesn't work as well. You know, it's better to have a variant of approaches and styles in your band. It gives
right,
it more life.
It is a lot more cost effective.
if
exactly. You just do it all.
I do that because it has to be cost effective, and I don't want to inconvenience my friends.
So the last one, I think, of the trilogy here that we're going to look at is The Singer with Nothing to Say. You're overrated.
Yeah.
Nobody listens. They stare at your hair as you sing the words.
Well, I don't think anything along the lines that there's not much good music out there today. As a matter of fact, I think it's the opposite. Like, I'm floored by the music that I stumble upon.
You're overrated. Nobody listens. They stare at your mouth while you sing the words. Overrated and better that way. 'Cause you're just the singer with nothing to say. You're elevated and so inflated, like people on the news. Now I can spot crap, there's no kickbacks. Here is your review. You're overrated, no one really listens. just a singer with nothing to say. You had a bad week, you had a bad streak, and now your world's falling down.
Cool. All right, we're going to move to the next theme then. And the next theme is politics. I mean, I noticed that, like I said, I really never wrote about anything specific until Trump came to office. And now I have like 15 anti-Trump songs all of a sudden. So
right.
it's been motivation to, you know, get out there and express what a lot of us are feeling. Walking Wounded, I think, probably, you know, fits the bill there. When the word came down after a bitter campaign, it beat everything we'd seen and the country went insane. I think we're pretty much there now. I think we're still insane and it's not getting any better.
Inspired by obvious events.
Took everything I ever knew and washed it all away. Life was so unkind, but the sun began to shine, and so we went in search of higher ground, left it all behind. Now we are the walking wounded, we're not finished by far. Yeah, we are the walking wounded, and we'll learn our battle scars. We'd ever seen the country went insane. Bad news beholden, evil emboldened. I don't think I can stand to hear it every day. We are the walking wounded, we're not finished by far. And we are the walking wounded, they will earn our battle scars. We're still upright on our feet, proud of what we are. Yeah, we are the walking wounded. We'll learn our battles.
It's just crazy stuff, you know. I mean, we don't even have a functioning government at the moment, you know.
Yeah, it's hard not to be filled with dismay at oftentimes with our current administration. That's certain.
So let's talk about North Carolina. We're better than this. I know this was part of some political activity that was going on at the time.
You know, we had our governor now, Cooper. At the time, we had McCrory when I wrote that song, and we were trying to remove him from office and get Governor Cooper elected. And so it was just a group of folks from all over the state, musicians that got together and decided that we were going to donate our time to record a record and put on some shows and really let our thoughts be heard and known.
North Carolina, we're better than this. I grew up here, so I'll confess, we weren't always at our best. But North Carolina, we're better than this. North Carolina, we're better than this. And if we love the kids as we say, why do we strip funds away with no increase to teacher pay? If we love the kids as we say, oh, North Carolina, we're better than this. I grew up here, so I'll confess, we weren't always at our best. But North Carolina, we're better than this. North Carolina, we're better than this.
And it was spearheaded by John Lindsay, who was the most wonderful, smartest, kind-hearted fellows, in conjunction with Caitlin Carey, who a lot of people will know from the Raleigh area, from the band Whiskey Town. And they kind of spearheaded the whole thing and got us all together and pulled us all into it. And it was just a great experience to be with a lot of these other North Carolina musicians that I've always loved and admired, and get to work with them. We all recorded the record together and played and sang on each other's tunes. And, well, damned if Governor Cooper didn't get elected and we sank McCrory. And, you know, we feel really proud that, you know, we might have had some hand in that process.
Well, you're making all the difference in the world.
Exactly, which leads to another tune. But
that one comes later.
So anyway, that was the North Carolina Music Army is always going to be very dear to my heart. It was just a wonderful time and a wonderful group of folks.
Yeah, it sounds like a great experience. I mean, even in the song you say, you know, if we love the kids as we say, why do we strip funds away? When I was in Winston-Salem, I was teaching fifth grade, actually, before getting back into doing audio engineering. And, you know, I taught a bunch of kids. We didn't even have a complete set of science books in the room. So if I gave science homework, they, you know, they couldn't take the books home. You know, I mean, this is America, and, you know, in this day and age. And, you know, we've got $5 billion for a wall, and we don't have 30 science books. You know, it's crazy.
Right, right. I remember when John Lindsay, the guy who organized the whole thing, sent me an email, and he said, "Snooze, we're putting this together, and I need you to write a song for us about this fight, you know, that we're all involved in." And he said, you know, and we want to do this like right now. We want to, you know, record this album. And, and so I had, you know, a couple of days to send them back something that would be acceptable. And I remember just, I didn't even know how to approach it except for that chorus came into my head, the notion that North Carolina, we're better than this. And, you know, like I mentioned before, it's usually just like a song title or something that'll pop into my head. And then I know I've got a song around it. I just have to put the work into it to fill in the blanks and the you know, the missing spaces. And, you know, writing a song does take work. It's not going to just magically come to you. I definitely feel like a conduit when I'm writing music, like I'm pulling in things that are above my pay grade, that, you know, I'm pulling in from a spiritual world almost.
Yeah, I have the same kind of feeling where I think, where did this come from? Maybe it came from the last 40,000 songs that I listened to that somehow got synthesized up in my head or whatever. But yeah, it's hard to put your finger on it sometimes, and you're like, oh, that's, you know, that's another, you know, Paul Simon quote. You know, when he wrote Sounds of Silence, they said, well, what did you think about it? He said, well, that's better than I usually do.
It's never coming back, it's never coming back, it's never coming back again. And I could cry all night with them tears in my eyes, but it's never coming back again. Well, just like you, I once had a dew, it was standing on the top of my head. It was long, thick and strong, it was auburn with a touch of red. It was auburn with a touch of red. But it's a never coming back, it's never coming back, it's never coming back again. And I could cry all night with them tears in my eyes, but it's never coming back again. Well, and this girl, she was my world. I thought that if she left me, I'd die. But now she's gone, I carry on, but notes are welling up in my eye. And there ain't no time to cry. But she's a never coming back, she's never coming back, she's never coming back again. And I could cry all night with them tears in my eye, but she's never coming back. Saves, and he died for everything that I've done. And my innocence came and went like Christians waiting on the wrong one. Yeah, he ain't gonna come. No, he's a never coming back. He's never coming back. He's never coming back again. You can cry all night with the tears in your eyes.
It's never coming back. It's never coming back again.
So, all right, moving on. Theme number three, religion. I've got Never Coming Back on the playlist, which I really love because you kind of mash up the fact that your hair is never coming back, your girl's never coming back, and Jesus also is never coming back. I was raised to think Jesus saves and he died for everything that I've done, but none of those guys are coming back.
A song dealing harshly with reality, I suppose.
Although many people would beg to differ, and of course, then it leads to the fact that, and I'm sorry for your loss, that you actually played a religious song for your dad when he was in the hospital recently.
Oh, that's true, yeah. That was an interesting experience. When my father was in the hospital, and he told me he was writing a song. And so just trying to do anything, you know, with my father as he's laying there, you know, immobile in the hospital. So I encouraged him to, let's further this along. Okay, well, what are you writing? He really wanted to express this. And so I started writing down the lyrics that were coming into his head. And most of them weren't really suitable song lyrics. They were more like he was just witnessing to me.
All right, Dad, you got to sing your part. You know I'm a believer. Yes, I am. Yes, I am. I don't follow no deceiver. No, I don't. No, I don't. Until St. Peter at the pearly gate. That I hate to make him wait, but I gotta thank my Jesus one more time.
You know, I think together we came out with something that was, you know, worthy of existence. You know,
right,
my father and I.
A very, and, very touching thing for sure. My wife got to do something similar. She went to the hospital to a man who I think passed away the next day. I mean, he was pretty much on the way out, and he wanted to hear the sound of the shofar, which is a hollowed out ram's horn that we use in religious services. We're both Jewish, and this sound of the shofar is what he wanted to hear as he was leaving this earthly world.
So he was Jewish?
He was, yeah. She probably found him through our temple or whatever.
Oh, and, well, that makes sense that he'd want to hear that.
Yeah, and so she actually, she knows how to, she doesn't like when you say blow the shofar. you sound the shofar, and it's literally this twisted up, hollowed out ram's horn, and it makes this, you know, crazy, you know, bellowing sound. It's really loud. She went down there and she sounded the shofar for this man, and
he
was very pleased. And then I think the next day, you know, he passed away. But we call that a mitzvah. You know, it's a good deed that you do for a person, and that certainly was the case for your dad. And plus, you know, fuck if I know, probably wasn't the right choice in that moment. So,
well, it's funny because that's at the same time that I had written Fuck If I Know. I mean, I had already written it. It was already, you know, I'd already had the whole song in my pocket. I think I had already recorded it. But the video, I hadn't done the video for it.
Right, right.
But
it is one of my favorites, I have to say.
It was definitely two songs in a row that contradicted themselves rather strongly.
I'm agnostic, yeah, won't delude myself or think that I'm better than anybody else. It's just the way I feel, I got a right to that, I don't believe it. I'm agnostic, yeah, won't convince myself of some validity too easily dispelled. It's just the way I feel, I got a right to that, I can't conceive it. Fuck if I know what the end will hold. If we have a soul, where's it go? Well, fuck if I know.
my time is now. I want my right to die. It's just the way I feel. I got a right to that. I don't believe it. Fuck if I know just what the end will hold. If we have a soul, where's it go? Well, fuck if I know. Or think that I'm better than anybody else. It's just the way I feel. I got a right to that. I don't believe it. And fuck if I know.
Fuck if I know
what the end will hold.
If
we have a soul, where's it go? Well, fuck if I know. Where's it go? Fuck if you know. Where's it go?
Of course, you can fit Shut Up Singing About the End of the World in there too, which is probably the best song title I've ever heard. You know, aren't we always in the end times? And isn't it always about to just, you know, go belly up? You know,
absolutely.
Jim Baker will sell you a 50-pound bucket of mac and cheese for you to chow down on as the world goes up in flames. I mean, it's always the end times.
Right. And there are certainly, you know, real scenarios that we need to worry and be concerned about. But you also have to consider the time, you know, I wrote that song was in like the early 90s, and the whole Y2K religious angle of the end times was just off the hook. And that's mostly what that tune is about.
Shut up singing about the end of the world. It's been coming 2,000 years. I got the moon, I got my girl. Shut up singing about the end of the world. Evangelist on my TV on channel 6, and he's telling me I need to change something desperately. I've changed the channel from 6 to 3. Now that fucker's off my TV. Saying, you know, God's will from your deadbolt windowsill, carbon from your automobile must have made your brain go numb. I think it ends 2001. I know that people are dying every day. I know one day I'll die too, but it's not the end of this world.
I definitely believe we have real concerns ahead of us, you know, but you have to take in context when that tune was written and what was kind of current. Yeah, I'm continually saddened at how people feel like their lives are manipulated by forces beyond their control, you know, spiritually and religiously and superstitiously, when they're not.
So in the song Fuck If I Know, one of your more recent songs, you say, everybody's got the answer, and I don't find it pertaining to me.
Mm-hmm.
And this probably brings us along to the next theme, which, you know, maybe the elephant in the room or whatever, although it's something you've been dealing with for a while, is your health situation. So to the degree you're comfortable, if you want to just talk a little bit about that. And for me, I think that kind of informs your songwriting, what you're going through. You know, I'm sure you'd rather have good health better than good songs, but it's something I think that gives you a unique perspective, you know, kind of on life and death and what we're all going to be facing at some point.
Yeah, I mean, like that line that you mentioned, you know, even on my deathbed with cancer, I won't participate in that fantasy. And that's, you know, I feel like I have been, you know, nearly on my deathbed before my bone marrow stem cell transplant, or about a year and a half before it. I was extremely ill and like completely bedridden for about 4 or 5 months, where I really thought that, you know, that was it. And, you know, and it could have been, but they miraculously found a different chemotherapy combination that turned things around for me. So which allowed me then to regain my health to what I had the strength enough to undergo the bone marrow stem cell transplant, which then, you know, improved my health even more. So in the last couple of years, I've been of relative health. You know, I've been fairly productive in playing and recording, and so I'm real fortunate in that regard. At this point, it's about nearly two years out now from the transplant, and I've got a return of symptoms. They're not dramatic or anything like that at this point. They're still manageable, and I'm not being treated in any way currently, but that's probably going to have to change here in the near future. The type of lymphoma that I have, Waldenstrom's macroglobulinemia, has one of the highest rates of recidivism, which means, you know, it's likely to come back, and it's quick.
Unlike your hair, or your girl, or
right.
Savior.
Unfortunately,
why can't this be the thing that never comes back?
It never got the memo.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that's what I'm dealing with now. But like currently, I'm still able to play, and you know, I have you know, some aches and some pains and things like that, and some difficulties here, but they're not overwhelming. I'm still able to do what I need to do, you know. Anyway, it's a concern, and it
sure
will be for the remainder of my time here, you know.
Yeah, we're all concerned, you know, for you, and always, you know, pulling for you and wishing the best. I know that probably leads us to Snooze Fest, if you want to talk about what that is and how that came about.
What it was.
So it's no longer. I'm not living in the area anymore, so I'm not plugged into what's happening. But
that was in early 2010, and that was two benefit shows that were held for me at the time. One in Greensboro and one in Chapel Hill, where local musicians learned my songs and got up, and they all played. They all chose, you know, one of my tunes to do, and everybody got up in different bands, got up and played my songs and stuff, and just to raise money to help pay for my medical expenses. And so that was just a super honor, and just, you know, a real time of camaraderie and gratefulness and appreciation.
Yeah, it had to feel good knowing all those people out there were concerned and wanted to do something to make things better. I mean, you also played for my Scott Miller benefit. You came up and played a song, and it was the same thing. We raised a few hundred bucks for his kids. And
I enjoyed hanging out with you very much that night.
I know.
Sure did.
And there's even a video of it to prove it.
Oh, the TJ.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, he was up there doing that. Wow, okay, good.
Exactly. He shot a bunch of stuff, and there's like a 20-minute edit of just interviews with, you know, you and I and Michael Slaughter and Doug Davis outside and some of the fans
mm-hmm.
who came out
yep.
or whatever. You got to get the videos out there, you know.
Well, you know, all my songs don't merit having a video along with them. With this particular song, All the Difference, I just had, you know, these images that I knew would work great with the song and help communicate what I was trying to get across.
Yeah,
I mean, I just knew it was going to work, and I knew people would connect to it. And I just had that vision for it, and it's kind of, you know, very similar to my other past videos where you know, I hijack videos from other sources oftentimes.
Right, sure.
But I just felt that kind of, the song needs to be heard by people right now. It's kind of a message that I felt like needed to exist at the moment.
Oh, my love, well, you know it's true. I wouldn't want to know my life without you. You make all the difference in the world. You make all the difference in the world. Standing in line with the protest sign. Don't let them say you're wasting time. You make all the difference in the world. You make all the difference in the world. You make me feel just the way I should. The people are still intrinsically good. They don't know how far their tentacles reach. I'll credit you for changing me. And to someone who lets the good come through, think you don't count, but you know you really do. You make all the difference in the world. You make all the difference in the world.
Extra attention to the song. Like, take for example, you know, I recorded that song and I think I made it, I posted about it and people loved it and listened to it and probably forgot about it, but you know, putting this video together, and it just gave it new life, you know, and helped people, you know, reinvigorate their affinity for the tune.
Right, absolutely. And that leads to our last theme, which is life and death. You've got the other side that we're going to hear here. And plus, I like the nod to Seasons in the Sun with the birds singing in the sky.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, that's exactly where that nod's from. Absolutely.
Oh,
and you know what? Most songs that I write have a nod to a shoulder that I've been standing on, and it's usually apparent, and I make it apparently so purposely, you know. And I kind of enjoy that. You know, I've always enjoyed, you know, hip hop music that might have a line from a song that you know, and it's just cool that but then it's expounded upon to the point where, oh, you're not worried about it being plagiaristic. You know, I mean, this guy, you know, he took it to a totally different place, but he gave reverence, homage to where it came from. And I think that kind of thing's cool, and
yeah,
I like to incorporate it in my stuff too.
Surprise, everyone's gonna die. When I'm at the end of life, my darling, do not cry. The other side, other side, I see you on the other side. The other side, other side, I see you on the other side. When I'm on my dying bed, when I draw my I won't be half as scared. I remember what you said. The other side, other side. See you on the other side. Other side, other side. No one knows what lies in wait. No one has a handle on your fate. The ones think they
the sky. Love you, but before I go, there's one thing you ought to know. The other side, other side, I'll see you on the other side. The other side, other side, I'll see you on the other side.
And so the other side, you say, no one really knows what lies in wait. No one has a handle on your fate, which goes along with the other songs you've written.
Well, you know, it's funny. These songs that you're mentioning, this song and you mentioned another one a moment ago, that were on the original version of 4 or 5 or 20 that, I mean, they were available for a short time on my Bandcamp site.
And right, that's where I got them from.
I have since dubbed those songs Not Good Enough, that inner editor that you heard
wow.
about earlier.
And those are the ones I like. Isn't that always how it is?
Well, that inner editor, and he's way too hard, but he stepped in and he bid that I pull those songs. I pulled them. They're not even available. So if you got them, you got them.
But it's going to be an exclusive.
And I have done that so much, Rob. That's one reason that the title 4 or 5 or 20 works for this record in progress, because it could have 4, 5, or 20 on there. You don't know how many songs, and they might get pulled. New ones might get added. It's a living, breathing album.
And then so we've got, I think, a couple more here. Die Trying from 2009, our life and death theme here. And this is kind of mm-hmm. from when you were first diagnosed. I mean, I think I'd want to just crawl up in a ball and you know, wait for the inevitable. But here you are writing a song called Die Trying from around that same period, you know, when you're finding out all about this.
Yeah, so that was recorded well before I was diagnosed.
Oh, okay. I thought it was kind of a response to what you've been going through.
No, I guess I'm just being prophetic.
Yeah. Well, I'll die trying. I'll never give up. Even when the odds are down, when no one gives a fuck. And even when pigs are flying, hell is frozen up. Well, I'll die trying. I'll never give up. And I know it's hard to love someone whose head is in the stars, but don't give up. Hold on soon until I've kept my promise and have given you the moon. I will die trying. I'll never give up. Even when the odds are down, when no one gives a fuck.
Quite young, I guess, when I was writing that. I don't know what the hell I was opining about. Any song that I release is from the heart, and I'm not under any pressure to write anything. I don't have to write another song as long as I live. I don't. I feel like I've written plenty of fine stuff, but I still have the motivation to write. You know, I really do, and I will continue. And I've got stuff I'm recording now. I think some of the best stuff I've ever done, I think, is still ahead of me.
Yeah, well, I mean, I continue to hear the quality in your writing. You know, I mean, so, some people seem to have that period where they're just really firing on all cylinders, and then it kind of fades away a little bit or whatever. But the stuff you're mm-hmm. doing now maybe is even more impactful, you know, maybe
well,
you know, based on your
like
life
I'm,
experiences and the things
I
you're going
to. I feel absolutely, like you said, like I'm firing on all cylinders. I feel like I'm doing my best work right now, and it's even better what awaits. I've just got to get it done because I've got a certain amount of declining health that's occurring. And, you know, and part of that affects my voice. That's why I feel so fortunate that I can record and still, you know, I essentially I'm healthy when you push play, you're hearing basically a healthy me, what I could accomplish because, you know, then when my throat gives out, I don't have to record until I have a good day.
Right.
And so I feel real fortunate that I'm still able to produce, you know, and do what I love to do.
Well, we're fortunate to get to hear it. And I think we'll end on a positive note here. And I think people doing the kind of work that you are doing, which is just sadly missing these days. I mean, we just don't get songs that are funny, songs that are touching, songs that are about real things. We get, you know, let's go to the club and, you know, here's this
right.
Here's this thing I bought and, you know, isn't it expensive? And, you know, look at my shoes, you know.
Well, I got to say, Rob, it's a real honor that you wanted to call and speak with me.
Well, the pleasure was all mine.
Yeah, well, I'm just pleasantly surprised that people still notice good music.
I certainly wish you the best of health and you know, just continued creativity and just the energy to you know. Get up every morning and do it. It's hard for people who are healthy, you know, let alone people that are burdened just to, you know, get up out of bed sometimes. And
everyone is bearing a burden of some type, and it's nearly unspeakable. And most people don't speak about the burdens that they carry. And unfortunately, well, or fortunately for me, I don't know which, but mine's a little more publicly known because, you know, I'm a musician and I'm more in the public eye. But I, you know, I don't need or deserve sympathy more than anyone else because, you know, most people are dealing with something similar than with what I'm dealing with, but they just don't get the attention.
All right, cool. This was awesome. Thank you so much to Snooze. And
yeah.
please go out and find everything he's done, whether it's on a CD or it's being downloaded off the internet or whatever the kids are into these days. I mean, his stuff is out there, and it is well worth your time exploring.
Well, I'm pouring my heart out to a mic on a bin, but it's just a product for them to consume. They'll just download my heartache and pain. It's a good thing I play for the love of the game. It's the end of the season, though I'm 0-9. I'm not good looking and I don't march in line. There's no chance for fortune or fame. It's a good thing I play for the love of the game.